You're fake news, Steve.
That's not nice. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch, 11 minutes after 12 o'clock. Welcome, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. A lot on the program. You heard Kim say, or I think it was Orion, talk about the earnings report for Delta Airlines today. United announced some job cuts. Louis Lazar covers airlines for the Chicago Business Journal, and he'll be in to talk about that a little bit later in the program. And maybe he and I will put on an American Airlines flight attendant uniform in solidarity with him. Every time Lewis comes in, there's a new development in the scratchy uniforms at American. So we'll kick that around. Also in the second half hour, Elise Glink talks about marketing and live video. That's the big thing. And then Philip Weiss will be here, a frequent guest on the program from Seyfarth Shaw at Work. And Philip will talk about some new laws in 2017 that businesses should be aware of. But we start with Ian Scherer from CNET. Welcome back to the Business Lunch, Ian. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I'm not wearing an American Airlines uniform.
No? Well, then if you have to stop and itch or scratch, then you'll have to come up with a whole new excuse, Ian.
Well, you know, that's how it is.
All right. So everybody seems to be coming up with, we should do this. We should form a studio and start creating our own television programs. Everyone is. Apple is the latest to announce it. What do you know about that?
It's really interesting. So the Wall Street Journal reported today that Apple is looking at trying to bolster their streaming service. You know that there's Apple Music. It's $10 a month, and it's pretty popular. It's competing against Spotify, which is the leader in the streaming world. And there's now talk from the Wall Street Journal talking to executives and whatnot. They say that this is that Apple is looking at getting further into scripted content, which means TV shows, movies, whatnot, competing with stuff like Westworld and Stranger Things on Netflix and HBO. And so it's going to be very interesting to see. They're not going to try and turn into Hulu, according to the Wall Street Journal sources. They're not going to try and turn into Netflix, where there's a ton of content. They're going to try and choose the right stuff and really do successfully as much as possible with a few pieces of content to compete against Spotify.
So the idea is I'm not going to start paying $10 a month with Apple Music to get all my TV, but I might pay $10 a month to get a show. Like, so if they focus on one or two shows created to appeal to their target audience, that's going to bring people in.
Correct. And think of, you know, they already have the rights to Carpool Karaoke, which is very popular. And so it's very possible that they're going to try and push further on this stuff. It's going to be interesting. You know, the interesting part, if you listen to people like Netflix, they talk about how hard it is to choose the right shows. And if you're a Netflix subscriber, I'm sure you've looked through the list of stuff that Netflix has paid for and put on their service.
Yeah.
Some of it is great. A lot of it is not. And so it really depends on who you are, right? And so the problem with saying, well, we're just going to buy a couple of pieces of content, we're going to buy a couple of TV shows and a couple of movies, only the best, is that it's hard to define what the best is. And all you have to do is look at the yearly makeups of every one of the major networks. They put out a ton of shows that they hope will succeed, and only a few ever do. And so can Apple, like, make the right decision with only a couple of bullets, if you will? We'll see whether that works. It's going to be really interesting.
Because the networks can afford to have a few bombs because they've got two or three others that are succeeding. If Apple only puts up a couple of programs, there's going to be a lot of eggs in just a couple of baskets.
Right. That's really the question, right? And, I mean, look, Apple can afford anything. They're one of the most profitable companies ever. But it's going to be – it's one of those things where it's also about how Hollywood looks at them and how their customers look at them. If they can't be trusted to choose this type of stuff the first time around, then people may not come back and say, well, you know, I'll try it again later down the line.
It's amazing
and
to
so
me.
That's going to be the real question.
It's amazing to me that we're celebrating this year the 10th anniversary of Steve Jobs introducing the iPhone. I mean, I just feel like it's been part of my anatomy for a lot longer than 10 years.
Yeah, well, that's the funny part, right? And I mean, that gets back to how Apple is a changing company. I mean, if you think about how much this device has changed our world, I mean, I tend to remind people the word selfie was not really a popular word before 2007.
No.
Like the impact that these little, you know, the supercomputers in our pockets have had is just, it's indescribable. And part of what a lot of it is the amount of access to information we have. We have stuff like, you know, I know whenever I'm in an argument now with friends, I don't have to end it with saying, well, we'll see who was right later down the road. We pull out our phones. We check now.
You know, let me say something.
To our work.
Let's time together. If I'm watching The Crown on Netflix, I'm doing it with my phone. You know, they make reference to this lord or that or the Sandringham or something like that. I look it up on my phone while I'm watching a show on my computer to learn about it and to figure out what's real and what's not.
Well, and let's talk about the retail industry, right? Sears is right there in Chicago. One of the biggest impacts to the retail world has been the phone. The ability to pull out my phone at any moment, turn on the camera on it, and scan the price of anything in that store. And if it's $5 cheaper on Amazon, I walk out of the store. And so it's incredible how much of an impact these devices have had, both for consumers and for business. And they're still going to be felt for many years. And what I think is fascinating is that if you think about it, that we may not have another one of those monumental shifts in technology again. The entire industry is trying to find it to figure out what comes after the phone. And the reality is that they don't know. But we have been watching as this phone has just changed so much of the industry. So it's going to be really interesting to see, like, can the tech industry have another huge hit like the iPhone and like the smartphone that came after it? Or did we watch one of these just monumental shifts happen, and that's going to be it, and everything else is going to be kind of incremental progress from there?
I don't think it will be it, because so much has changed since the iPhone. And, you know, and they were laughing. Some people were laughing when the iPhone was introduced. Some people within Apple were. I think Steve Ballmer was poo-pooing the iPhone when it was introduced.
Very famously, he boo-hooed it, yes, and BlackBerry as well. And, I mean, we've written on CNET many times about the different companies who believe that they've got the right answer and that Apple, you know, they can finally upend Apple. And what's been really fascinating is how well Apple has been able to reproduce that success with the iPhone every time. I remember when I was reporting on the lawsuit with Samsung, one of the things that came up in that conversation was when Apple was trying to estimate what sales would be of the iPhone every year, they said they couldn't even begin to fathom how big it would be. And so the joke that they came up with was that they would have to take all the Apple iPhone sales ever, add them all together, and that's how it would do in the new year. And so it's incredible to think that something could be that massive, but that's what it became.
Ian Schur from CNET. Great to talk to you again. Look forward to the next time.
My pleasure.
It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Girl crazy about it, 1223, it is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Louis Lazar is in the studio. He writes for the Chicago Business Journal. Louis, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Good morning. Afternoon.
It is afternoon. It's morning somewhere, though. That's okay. We were just talking about Hawaii and airlines, so it's morning. It's morning in America, for God's sakes. You should know that by now. Okay, so Louis writes about, you know, advertising and different things for the Business Journal, and one of the focuses is on airlines, and it seems as if there always are a lot of stories going on to keep you busy. And one of the things, I think you started with me or talked to me way back in September maybe, and I kind of made fun of it, were these American Airlines, the flight attendants' uniforms. That is this long-running sort of standoff. Now, what's going on
there? It started off, you know, a lot of people cracking jokes about, well, they got some itchy uniforms, too bad. But, I mean, this has really turned into, I think, crisis is not an apt word to use to describe it. I mean, and it's really become a major standoff between management and the flight attendants union about how this matter is going to be resolved. They're trying to do more testing, but the union doesn't believe the right protocols are in place yet, so things are not going well.
Was there a guy who got kicked upstairs over this, too? Or?
Right. The guy who was in charge of management side for American, who was in charge of the flight attendants, has suddenly got new responsibilities, which adds another mystery to the whole thing.
And so these uniforms, everyone sort of agrees, right, that these uniforms are having a physical impact on people who wear them, but they can't figure out what's causing it.
Right.
And so why don't they just bag the uniforms and go with a different company?
Well, because American management doesn't want to admit that they've got, I mean, they do admit they've got a problem, but they don't want to resolve the problem that way. They want to just keep testing and hoping, I think, at some point that somehow the thing goes away. But I don't think that's going to happen. So will we go on? I mean, at some point, somebody's going to have to blink here. It's most likely going to have to be management, I think.
Well, we'll see, because they seem to be having a standoff about not having the tests and all that.
Right,
so
right.
It's just a fascinating little thing that has become so big.
Right. I mean, that's why I've sort of been, you know, I've written countless stories about it. We're well into month number four. So, I've been trying to document each little step along the way. It will be fascinating for me, too, to see how this thing resolves itself.
Let's go to American Airlines. And actually, there was a study that came out. I'm trying to find the name of the group. You might know off the top of your head. That looked at the profitability.
Was actually a trade publication, Airline Weekly, that does this every year. They chart the profitability of 72 carriers around the world.
And of the big carriers, the big U.S. carriers, United finished fourth.
Last of the four big U.S.
carriers. Was it, 17% margin?
14% operating margin.
And the winners, the people with the highest margin, are Ryanair and, right.
Well, Allegiant and Spirit are the two real ringleaders in the ultra-low cost, and both of them are hugely profitable.
But Alaska Air was number four?
Sort of wedged in there, too. Yeah, I mean, I don't cover Alaska Airlines carefully, but apparently they run themselves very well and make a nice profit at the end of the day. Southwest was right up there at the top, too, just out of the top four. I mean, so they, too, all these low-fare carriers are doing pretty well.
There's changes at Southwest as well, right? They've got a new guy in charge of labor relations.
It's not going over well with labor, it's a very volatile business, but, you know, interesting nonetheless.
So I know we have talked about that during your times in here, and I thought that they had come to a contract agreement with the pilots, right? But it was a very unpopular guy who was there. He got chased.
He got canned, or he retired, excuse me.
Right.
I shouldn't say canned.
We should all retire.
But, I mean, they happen to have a leader of the pilots union, which is certainly the most powerful union at Southwest, who is calling out management on all these things that they're doing, and he's not shy about making his views known. And he's the one who sent out on behalf of the pilots the very forceful letter saying, we don't believe this guy is the right guy to run the labor relations department. So,
okay. So
we'll see how that plays out.
So who, American, United, Delta, Southwest, which is the most healthy right now?
Well, I mean, in terms of money, they're all doing well because they're making money hand over fist because oil is so low. Now, the minute that changes, we're going to see a whole different story play out, I'm afraid. It's going to see who's... I mean, they're all, while they're making all this money from the low oil prices, they're all trying to establish themselves so they can weather the next time oil shoots up in price. Now, whether we'll see who's the smartest of the group once that happens.
Louis Lazar writes about the airlines advertising all sorts of things for the Chicago Business Journal. Thanks for coming by.
Pleasure.
We'll see you again soon, I hope.
I hope.
How was the walk across the bridge? Was it okay? Not too
the
bad.
Wind is low. It made it delightful. It's still a little raw, but the wind is not there.
At least
there,
the ice
good.
Is gone, so you're
the
good there.
The ice is gone. So all is well, I guess, for mid-January.
We'll talk again soon. This is The Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Philip Weiss will be along a little bit later in the program to talk about one of the things. Elise Glink is here from Monday Morning Marketing Podcast at WGNplus.com and BestMoneyMoves.com. And she just knows everything about marketing and money. And welcome.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
I distracted myself, but... So
it's easy to do. There's a lot of cameras in here.
We're talking a little bit about social media off the air, and I want to bring up Twitter with you. But one of the new laws has to do with employers not being able to sort of force employees to show them their Facebook page or give them their sign, because that's sort of been a big thing when it comes to employee weeding out, looking at how they behave on social media.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was having this conversation with a nephew of mine who lives in Europe this morning, in fact. And I said he wants to get a job here in the U.S. He's a U.S. citizen. He has dual citizenship. And I said, well, let's look at your LinkedIn page. And it was just almost completely blank. And he said, well, nobody in England uses LinkedIn. And I said, well, let me school you on what's going on here in the U.S. Because if you want to get a job here, you've got to remake your life in order to meet the needs of U.S. employers.
Right. And I got to do that too. That was one of my Christmas break things, working on LinkedIn. And
didn't quite happen.
Not quite there.
One of these days, we're going to get off the air and you and I are just going to do it together.
You're going to make my life better.
That's right.
Let's talk about Twitter. They made a little news today.
Yeah, TechCrunch was reporting that Twitter is going to disband the mobile version of its dashboard for kind of the behind the scenes. So if you've got a Twitter account, you can look at your analytics and all this on mobile. A little unclear if they're also going to disband it for regular monitors. My guess is they probably are going in that direction. And Twitter has been under so much pressure for finances, not to mention the content that some of its users are pushing out there. So it's tough.
Why would they do that? Because that, to me, seems like something that would attract business.
Right. I don't think anybody knows why they're doing it, but they shut down Vine. They've fired a bunch of people. Looks like they are trying to do a massive reorg to better meet the needs and maybe get it in alignment with revenue.
Twitter's all they got, right? There's nothing other than Twitter?
Yeah, they've bought a bunch of other things, but no, it's basically Twitter. So maybe what they're doing is getting themselves in shape to be purchased.
Well, could Twitter ever go away?
Wouldn't that be interesting, given that our president-elect uses it so frequently?
Yeah, I mean, so it's not going to go away.
I don't think it's going to go away. You know, from a business perspective, if you have 400 or 600 million users and you can't figure out how to monetize
money,
that, what's wrong with you?
So after you fix me and my LinkedIn page, you'll go to Twitter and help out the people at Twitter?
I think I'm too expensive for them. But
we were sort of, you know, we did have this idea of if Twitter didn't exist, it would really change the political dynamic that we're living in right now.
Yes, it would change that, and it would also change the way journalists and citizen journalists are operating all over the world. Twitter is such a go-to place now for news and information. So if something happens and a bomb explodes somewhere, you know, instantly you can see that on Twitter.
Right.
Almost at the same time. Now, video has been, you've been able to upload video for a while to Twitter. Although they've gotten rid of Vine, which was the 6-second video thing, but they still have, you still can use it, some video with it, I think. And video is really instantaneous. It's all about what's happening at the moment. It's a little bit like what Facebook Live is trying to do.
And so video is where we are right now. That's what everyone is pushing.
You know, video has been the place to be for probably the last 8 to 10 years. It's just that now the bandwidth has caught up to it. Our smartphones are now video smart. And the image quality you're getting on your phone, I think Martha Stewart said last year when she was testing out Facebook Live, she basically got rid of all the camera people, and she's got a guy holding an Apple.
That's amazing.
And that's what she's doing it with.
I was talking to Ian Schur earlier in the program from CNET about this was just the 10-year anniversary of the introduction of the iPhone.
Right.
And you talked about how video has been what it is. You know, I started doing podcasts for Barnes & Noble, not really podcasts, but it was audio online, interviewing authors, and I think maybe 2005 or 2006, and had three or four successful big years with them, and then came video. And so then we transferred to video, and with Black Dog Radio, I did some video for them a couple of years, but then came the Nook, and they took all the money from their online content and put it in the Nook. So we have gone through so many revolutionary changes in this world, and in the past 20 years certainly, but just in the past 10 with the iPhone.
Yeah, it's a little bit crazy how smartphones have penetrated and then changed everything. And it really speaks to sort of the larger problem that marketers have, right, and CEOs have, which is how do you anticipate and then plan for, budget for, and then act on the latest, greatest thing when you have no idea what it's going to be, and by the time it's here, you already have to be an expert in it.
And so, okay, so let's go to video, live video.
Sure.
Facebook Live, you can't escape it. And we learned in Chicago a week ago how there can be real dangers with Facebook Live.
Oh, my goodness, absolutely.
How does a business harness all of that?
You know, I think it's really unclear. I almost think that in some ways when I look out and I see who's successful, it's one of two things. It's lightning in a jar. So in other words, you just get lucky.
Right.
It's that cat video that 100 million people watch. But
I didn't see that one, by the way.
I'll send it to you after we're off the air.
Right.
But then there's the other one where, you know, the other side of it, where you've got a regular programmatic approach that is affordable, that there is some value, ROI value to it, and you're just in there doing it all the time. And so you kind of make your own luck. And those are the two ways.
You talk about ROI. There's not much of an investment, right? You buy an iPhone and do it?
You buy an iPhone or an Android. I've got, you know, mobile. Everybody's got video now. But the investment is time, right? There's this time component beyond the actual, buying the actual equipment kind of a component.
Sure, sure.
But your time to actually do it, think about it, plan for it, use social media to promote it. There's a lot of time involved. And so how valuable is your time? If you're starting out in business, it may not be that valuable. If you're, you know, a CEO, it might be.
You've got to be willing to, or you've got to be more willing to wing it a little bit with, or right, with live video. And what I mean by that is that if you're producing a video to post online, you're controlling it. You know what's there all the time. If you're doing something live, you don't have that control.
Yes, it makes attorneys very, very nervous. So regulated businesses are probably not going to be doing this unless the attorneys can get comfortable with risk mitigation. So what do I mean by that? If you're a credit reporting agency, you're going to have the CFPB, the Consumer Finance Protection Bureau, right down your throat if you seem to be making promises about how you can improve somebody's credit. But if you are not a credit reporting agency, you're not regulated in that way, and let's say you're a credit card company, you might not be. So it's going to depend on kind of what the business is.
All right, let's take a neighborhood restaurant on the Northwest Side. How would they use Facebook Live? I mean, how would they use live video? I mean, because, again, you have to advertise or promote the fact that it's going to be live and people have to look at it when it is.
All right, so there's a pizza box sitting in the green room.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you like to see a video of how, I think it's Lou Malnati. Somebody must have brought it in.
I had one thick and one thin, but that's it. I know my limits.
Where's the thin? You ate the whole thing.
I might have.
Okay. So wouldn't you, that's such a famous pizza. It could be Uno's. It could be anybody in town. Maybe you use a video that actually shows you making that pizza. And maybe it shows you making somebody's pizza in particular, especially if you're doing something original and different with it.
And you do it live, and then it still lives on video.
Sure.
So you post it and use it that way.
Absolutely.
Elise Gling, check out bestmoneymoves.com. Nice to see you again.
Nice to be here, Steve.
It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Well, 12:51. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Steve Bertrand here. Thanks very much for tuning in. I appreciate that. I hope you'll follow me on Facebook page, a public page, Steve Bertrand. You can find that pretty easily. Or on Twitter at Steve Bertrand, where I retweeted a tweet from Seyfarth Shaw at Work today. Philip Weiss, the managing director, is Seyfarth Shaw at Work. Did I say that correctly?
You did.
Philip is in the
again.
Studio. I know. Great to see you again. How's your new year been?
Great. Good to see you as well.
And so, it's the new year is getting a little long in the tooth. We're already 12 days into it. But one of the things that we've been talking about since last month was a discussion about the new laws and how things have changed for businesses. And that's what I wanted to kick around with you a little bit today. And one of them, I'm trying to remember the story. I think it was 911 operators. I'm pretty sure it was 911 operators, someone like that, to where the city, I can't think of the business, but they couldn't keep the offices staffed because so many of these workers were taking family leave through the year to take care of sick ones or because they couldn't schedule time off. And they were just taking family leave. And the bosses couldn't really question that. And now this year, the people for whom you can take family leave has expanded. Is that the case?
It has. And that actually, the 911 story.
Was it 911?
I think it was. That's actually a good illustration because one goal of the law is to create a system that people will actually follow and use the leave that's allocated for family members. And up until now, it's really been in Illinois, they just adopt the federal law. Which means if you're sick in some significant way, your parent, your spouse, your child, your immediate family,
right,
you can leave work to take care of them without getting paid. What's changing is, first of all, it's expanding the scope. Now it includes grandparents. Now it includes mother and father-in-law. And it basically takes, Steve, whatever sick leave you have for yourself. You're entitled to over, let's say, a six-month period. You can use that time to take care of one of these expanded family members.
Okay. I'm okay with that.
Yeah. You know what? I'm glad to hear that. Usually you object. You object to the new laws, and you should be okay with it because there's not that much sick leave that's granted in general.
Right.
To your point, it builds some accountability, and it really reflects how many workers are taking care of sick or ill relatives. And interestingly, under the federal law, you used to be able to tell your mother-in-law, sorry, I can't leave work. It's illegal.
Right.
You can't say that anymore. So that may be one downside. You got to be there for your in-laws, and the law allows you to.
And getting back to that 911 thing, one of my misunderstandings about the federal family leave was I thought you had to take chunks of time. And these people were taking a day here, a day there, which, You know, that's got to change, because that I usually take the worker's side. I completely understand how that can be crippling for an employer.
Yeah. What you've identified is really one of these pieces of conventional wisdom about the Family Leave Act that most people have backwards.
You say wisdom. I say I was ignorant. I mean, I was ignorant of the fact that it was that way.
Well, you know, your thought process is logical, because if you hear 12 weeks, you're like, you don't realize that can be 12 weeks at once.
Right.
It can be a day at a time. It can be for five different conditions and four different people. The Illinois law helps to clarify that that, in fact, is the case. And we're seeing cases where in other states, like on the West Coast, where they have laws like this, Steve, companies are getting caught unaware. We had one case where a manager went to his boss and says, you know, my grandfather out in Hawaii.
Wink, wink, nod, nod.
Yeah, he's quite, well, you know, the fact there was very little winking, only in the manager's mind did he see the wink. And the employee said, I got to go take care of my dad in Hawaii for 3 days. At this kind of rehab facility, which actually had a golf course, by the way. The manager didn't believe.
Golfers need rehab, too.
Well, yeah, a different kind of rehab,
right,
depending on what their handicap is. Bottom line, though, is the manager just, like, inundated this guy with work, gave him all kinds of deadlines, tried to dissuade him from going to Hawaii for his, like, jaunt in Maui. The reality was it was a legitimate requirement, and a claim followed.
All right, real quick, I want to get to Facebook and that as well, because that's been a problem where you're applying for a job and they say, okay, give us your password. I want to, you must friend me on Facebook so that I can check out that. That's now illegal?
It is illegal in Illinois, and they're one of several states that have made that kind of request / coercion illegal. A couple of years ago, it was really the passwords that were protected, because passwords are viewed as private.
Sure.
Now, as you say, it's really getting access to the account, even leaning over the employee's shoulder and saying, hey, what are you tweeting? What are you texting there? So you don't want to compel them to show it to you or compel them to give you access.
Good thing, bad thing?
Good thing, because what happens is it's like when you ask recruiters, did you Google somebody? And the answer 80% of the time is, yes, I Googled the applicant. It doesn't give them much good information, exposes them to a lot of stuff that can come back to haunt
you. Wait, so you're saying it's not a good idea to Google an applicant?
It actually is, as popular a practice as it is, we find again and again that the information that you come up with on Facebook and Google does not indicate whether someone will be
really
a good employee.
Interesting.
But it exposes you to medical information, family information. In one case,
That you're not supposed to know. You're better off not knowing.
Better off not knowing.
Yeah.
Better
right.
off. And in some cases, not. In Illinois, marital status, Steve, is a protected status. If you find out someone's divorced and didn't otherwise know that, you'll probably find that online.
So in an effort to get to know the potential employee better, what you really do is exposing yourself.
That's right. Ignorance. This is where legal ignorance is bliss, to quote you.
Wow. Did I say that?
You said you were ignorant. I deny that's true, but I will tell you in this case it's a good thing.
Philip Weiss is the managing director of Seyfarth Shaw at Work, and I love when you come by. Thanks very much.
Good to see you.
We'll do it again soon?
Good.
It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN.